Hello, lacrosse friends. Welcome once again to Box La Beat on NLL Radio. It's also available on iTunes through Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I am Stephen Stamp, your host, and I'm joined this week by a couple of my colleagues at ilindoor.com, where you can find the best of lacrosse coverage on the internet. We talk about who is the MVP, the Defender of the Year, the Rookie of the Year so far in the NLL season, our most memorable moments, surprises, unsung heroes, and much more on Box La Beat this week. Enjoy. It's a really fun discussion. Box La Beat on NLL Radio. This week on Box La Beat, a pair of my colleagues at IL Indoor are joining me to talk about how things have gone to the midpoint of the National Lacrosse League season. We are 41 of 81 games through the year. Thanks for coming on, Pat Gregoire and Graham Perro.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks for having us. I'm excited.
So we are going to talk about a bunch of things. One of the things we're going to talk about is our voting at IL Indoor for the MVP, the Defender, and the Rookie of the Year so far this season. We did preseason voting, and it's interesting that the votes now were actually fairly similar in terms of the numbers of votes some guys got, but it was different people voting for them because obviously people are getting on and off. And we'll start with the MVP, and Mark Matthews got some votes in the preseason, and he actually got a pretty strong support here in the midseason. And what do you guys think about that? I'm going to let everyone know that Graham, you voted for Tom Schreiber. Patty, you were one of the Matthews voters, along with Brian Shanahan and Bob Chavez. So, Patty, why don't you start since you were on the Matthews train?
Yeah, well, I mean, this one, I feel like there's a handful of guys that you could easily make a case for it. I mean, looking at it there, Matthews, three votes, Jones, Church, Schreiber, all with one as well. So, but for me, the thing that kind of jumped up for Matthews, he's having another great season. He really seems to drive that electric offense in Saskatchewan. And it's, I read yours, and you could even make an argument for Church on his team, who he's been playing very well alongside. For Matthews, it's just he's the driving force on that offense. He is just a couple of points behind Church as well, and that's kind of was the deciding factor for me. But I had a hard time not actually going with Dane Smith. I was really, really close with going with Smith, but I went with Matthews instead.
Yeah, Dane Smith was one. He didn't get any votes, but I'm sure he was in everybody's mind. I know I was thinking, boy, Dane Smith, Buffalo, what they're doing. He's been really good. It was a pretty impressive resume he's put together this year again. But Graham, you went another way. You went with Tom Schreiber, and you agree with the folks from Relax, one of whom is Patty, but it was actually I think it was Ashley Docking that did the MVP one, right?
Yeah. She actually, well, it was Tyson and her compiling it, so I don't know if they each kind of grabbed one or so. There's going to be some more rolling through, but Ashley was the one who, I think, made the final decision on that one.
So, Graham, Tom Schreiber.
Yeah, I mean, he'll be out for the next month or so, which may prevent him from actually winning the award. But right now, he's my choice. I did make sort of a short list, and the short list was, like you guys said, Dane Smith, Mark Matthews, Adam Jones. But I ended up going with Schreiber. He's continued where he left off last season offensively. Obviously, he can score some beautiful goals, and he can score them from anywhere. He has more assists than he has goals, though. So he's kind of the quarterback. He's the Mark Matthews of the Rock, basically. He's never taken a penalty in his career. He's rarely turns over the ball. He's got a Sean Evans type work ethic, which in my mind is second to none, basically. He does everything right, and he's a lot of fun to watch. He's like I said, the quarterback of the Rock offense, which is for a while anyway was just blowing out everybody. We'll see how well he does when he comes back from injury. And depending on how long he's out, that's going to seriously affect his chances of being the league MVP at the end of the year, even if he continues on that pace. But I'm certainly not against the option of Mark Matthews as MVP either.
Yeah. And I think Schreier, excuse me, Schreier, I'm still getting over being sick, and there's actually talk from my, I was getting some acupuncture yesterday, and there's a concern I may have walking pneumonia, so if I cough once in a while, I apologize in advance, to me, Schreiber's chances of winning the full season award are slim and none, because he will be missing that amount of time, but we're picking the guys right now. We're not projecting. We're saying right now, and I think there's a really strong argument to be made for Schreiber as well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's a guy that I think if he was – the injury just kind of, you know, it threw me for a loop just to try to, you know, pick a guy that's, you know, that's, you know, not going to be in the lineup for a while. But I totally agree. I think if you're picking an MVP for – you know, the Toronto Rock, you're picking him, no doubt. And although Adam Jones had some impressive numbers, and same with Rob Hellier, I agree completely with Graham. He is the driving force on that offense. When the offense for the Rock isn't clicking, I mean, we saw in Toronto against Calgary, he had a lot of chances, but it wasn't really clicking for him, and the Rock had to find different ways to score, and it really wasn't working for them. And as I mentioned on Relax this week, I'm interested to see what the Rock do going forward without him, because it's pretty clear when Schreiber's scoring, the Rock's scoring, and there have been some instances, not this weekend against Georgia, but some other instances near the start of the year, and like I said, with that game against a strong Calgary team, they found a way to shut down that explosive offense, and I think a lot had to do with the fact that maybe it wasn't Schreiber's best game.
And one thing that Graham got into a little bit, that I don't know how much of a factor it plays in most valuable player, but there aren't many players that are more fun to watch than Tom Schreiber.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I agree, totally. I mean, he's a human highlight reel. He keeps getting better and better. And to think, you know, he's rookie of the year last year, you know, barely a year and a half playing the indoor game. It's bananas just to think how much better he can really get. I mean, can he get better? It's ridiculous how good he is already.
Graham, there was a vote for Dylan Ward for Marty O'Neill. He's not here to defend himself and his vote, but we can take a look at it. And I'm curious what you think about the Ward vote.
Dylan Ward for MVP, you mean?
Yeah.
I can see that. I mean, you can count on one hand the number of times an MVP has not been an offensive player.
Right.
So it's pretty rare. But
well, let's count them. Steve Dietrich was one.
Dietrich was one. Jim Veltman was one.
Right.
That may be it.
I feel like it might be. I don't think any other goalies have won it, have they?
I don't think so. Jeff Schaller was MVP one year, the same year he was transition player of the year.
But he was a forward.
Arguably an offensive player that year anyway.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even say arguably. He was an offensive player. Yeah. He was playing forward. It's like the years that Jordan McIntosh won transition player of the year. His numbers were great. He was a great player, but he was a forward. But yeah, anyway, I interrupted you, but you made me do it by saying that you could count on one hand. You know that's a challenge I can't turn down.
Can you or can you not? Yeah, I mean, Ward is arguably the best goalie in the league. He certainly was last year. Matt Vince looks like he's trying to give him a run for his money this year. But the fact that the Colorado defense has lost a couple of key players and is still playing as well as they have been, is at least part of that is a testament to the fact that they have so much confidence in their goalie, that they can be a little bit more aggressive and take a few more chances because they know that they have Dylan Ward behind them. And if something happens and somebody gets a shot away, he's in all probability going to stop it. So they can sort of make those kind of adjustments in the game. And if you don't have the ultimate faith in your goalie that he's going to stop those things, then you may play it a little more safe.
Yeah, and I'm actually just running through the list of league MVPs, and it really is all offensive guys with the exception of Steve Dietrich in 2006 and Jim Veltman in 2004. And quite a group when you look at it, going from 94, John Tavares, then Gary Gate, five times in a row, Tavares, Paul Gate, Gary Gate, Colin Doyle, John Grant Jr. twice, Sean Evans twice, of course, Dean Smith, Lyle Thompson, Casey Powell, and Dan Dawson. And that's about it. Ethan Iannucci, the 71-goal season. And that is your list of NLL MVPs. So, yeah, it would be very rare, and I am not against the idea. Ward has been great. I thought actually last year he could have been considered with how well he played as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think if you were going to make an argument for a goaltender for MVP, I think last year is the year. Just not saying that, you know, he's maybe not the team MVP, because I do agree. This Colorado defense does get a lot of credit, and as they should, you know, missing two key pieces right now due to injury, and they continue to hold some strong offenses and their numbers down. But I do believe a lot of that is because of the play of Dylan Ward. And when you have a guy like that back there, you know, your confidence is through the roof. And you know, like Graham said, you like taking more chances. You play much more confident because you know you've got a guy who's going to bail you out, you know, nine times out of ten.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, Ward as the Colorado MVP. I think, you know, you could make a case for Ryan Benesch as well, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think Jeremy Noble has been really critical to their success, but I might even go with a guy that's going to come up in our next topic, which is the Defender of the Year, and that's Robert Hope, who won our Defender of the Midseason with four votes. Graham Hossick got the other three, and I went with Hossick. Although it was a very difficult decision, Hope was my other guy. I also thought Chris Corbeil has been outstanding. Steve Priolo, really early in the season, it almost feels like his play has maybe not been quite up to that level lately. Brian Shanahan voted for Robert Hope, but mentioned Tyson Bell as a runner-up, and I like that call too. He's been outstanding. I think of him more as a transition player of the year candidate, so I wouldn't put him in D. But Graham, you're a Hope proponent after going for, I'm trying to think who you voted for in the preseason.
I'm pretty sure I voted for Hossick in the preseason.
That's right, you did.
And
so
I would probably put him at number two right now.
Yeah.
With Hope at number one.
So what made you switch?
I guess part of it was, as I said before, the Colorado defense has lost two of their key pieces. Mm-hmm. And Hope has basically taken over leadership of the defense, which is a role he's familiar with. He's done that in Peterborough in the summer. And not only have they done reasonably well without those two pieces, they're the second stingiest defense in the league in terms of goals given up per game. And, I mean, every member of that defense has stepped up his play, but I think part of it is Hope's leadership. A lot of it is by example. Now, I don't know what kind of a leader he is, if he's, you know, vocal on the floor, vocal in the clubhouse, that sort of thing. But just watching his play, he's been one of the best defenders in the league for years. It wasn't clear that he could get much better than he did, or than he has been, but he has. So just his play and his leadership this year put him over the top for me.
I can speak to his leadership a little bit, having since he is captain of the Peterborough Lakers as well. I see him a lot, and I see him on and off the floor, and he was a pretty natural choice, I thought, for the captain of the Lakers when Scott Self retired. And obviously the Mammoth felt the same way with Dan Coates being out for the season. And he is kind of, I guess I would characterize his leadership as quietly vocal. He will speak when he needs to. He's not a huge rah-rah guy, but he is. He will pump guys up. I mean, you think back to the Man Cup and, you know, him winning the ceremonial face-off in one of the games for the Man Cup that almost started a massive brawl. And I kind of like that because he felt like, hey, the last game, we were officially the home team and you won it, so who's to say I'm not supposed to win one of these draws? But he also, in the next game, when things looked like they might get out of hand, he didn't even put his stick down. for the next face off. He wanted to make it clear that everything was going to be fine. And he told me he had a, a nice chat with the ceremonial face off honored guest who said, "I'm not even putting the ball down. You're not taking this." And he was like, "No, I wasn't going to take it." So I think there's a lot of things that he brings to a club as a leader. But to me, the thing that's really helped him step his game up is his I felt like over the last year or so, he'd really stepped up the physical side of his game, trying to be more aggressive. And Pat, to me, it seems like this year he's hit the balance perfectly between aggression and control. Because again, he's only got 4 penalty minutes all season.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. He finds that balance where, you know what, he's super tenacious. He still has that unbelievable footwork. He's just, you know, a terror to go up against. He's usually matched up with, you know, the best forward on his opponent's team. But still, he rarely takes penalties. He always plays that line. But he still gets in guys' face. Guys don't like playing them. I couldn't agree more with what you said about him being a leader. And he's one of those guys that leads by examples, too. I mean, the guy soaks up so many block shots. It's ridiculous. It seems like, you know, at least once or twice a game, he's soaking a huge shot. He's breaking up passes. He's picking balls up, knocking him down. He's just disruptive. And I think that's the way you had to describe him. He's disruptive. I've been a big fan. I really noticed him in the summer a few years ago, how much he improved. And just this year, he stepped it up. And, you know, not having Coates, not having Holding, you knew that a lot of people were saying, "I don't know what this defense can do. We're going to have to see some defenders step up." Well, the whole defensive unit has stepped up, but him especially. And, you know, since they've thrown that C on his chest, I think he has done more than what they've expected out of him.
Yeah. I went with Graham Hossick for my vote, which I know will shock all the people who think that I only vote for Peterborough guys. But I think Hope has been fantastic. But to me, the difference, and I mentioned this in my musings column this week where I ran, you know, you can go to IL Indoor and check out all of the complete voting breakdown and some of our discussion about this. But I went with Hossick because, to me, Hope is physical and aggressive. Hossick takes it to another level, just flattens guys. And when you see him up close, he is just leveling players all over the floor, and people do not like having to play against him.
Yeah, you know what? I had it almost at a 1A, 1B here. But Hossick, it's just, you're looking, you know, he passes the eye test, obviously. Yeah. And then even when you look at his numbers, some nights you're scratching your head. Is that possible, the amount of loose balls and caused turnovers you have? And then sometimes if you don't watch the game live, you go back and it seems like every single defensive stand, he's getting involved, whether, you know, he's picking up a loose ball, moving it up floor. Like you said, absolutely demolishing guys down to the floor. And before the guys even hit the turf, the ball's in his stick, and he's moving the ball up the floor. He's a guy that, you know, from around the same area as me. So playing minor lacrosse against him, always known what kind of player he is. But at this level, how good he has gotten, it's, you use the word elite. He is an absolute elite defender for sure.
And Graham, I mean, obviously you're a Hossick fan. You had him picked before the season, and he's been pretty terrific. And you mentioned Schreiber never taking a penalty in the NLL. I mentioned Hope only had 2 minors. Hossick, even with the way he's playing the game, also only 2 minor penalties.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So he's aggressive when he needs to be, but he knows when to rein it in.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to move on. Oh, wait. We can't move on from defender without, I don't think we've even mentioned the name Kyle Rubish. And
For a defender of the year conversation.
Yeah, I would feel really funny not at least pointing out that he's in the conversation. And he's, I thought his start to the year maybe wasn't the best stretch of games he's ever played. He was still very good, but we're used to him being so dominant. But he's back on it, I think, the last several weeks. And he's a guy who could easily come on and take this thing for the full season.
Yeah, for sure. I think with Rubish, it's just the fact, like, kind of what you said there. At this point, I think we just expect so much out of him. And he's held at, you know, on such a pedestal because what we've seen out of him the last few years. But, 100%, he's always in the conversation, no doubt about that. Another guy that I kind of wanted to throw in there. Or, I mean, if we had a list or a short list, Latrell Harris is a guy that I think should be in the conversation here, because he has stepped his game up. We've always known he's been an athletic defender, you know, but his lacrosse IQ over this course of this season, and the fact that now he can, you know, play a shutdown role, he can be more of a transition player. He's just so versatile, and he's becoming, you know, one of the more dynamic defenders that the NLL has to offer.
Well, and he was last season, Matt Sawyer, I remember asking him towards the end of the season, who would you say is your top shutdown guy? And he said Latrell. And that was in his rookie year, as an, you know, started as an 18-year-old. He's 19 now, and actually at university, he's going to Brock University, where he got to the Gateway Cup Finals with the Badgers. And but yeah, he, you know, you think, okay, he's 19. He had such a great season last year. You know, maybe that's where he's going to be for a bit, but he's just, he has improved dramatically. And Graham, I know you, you're a season ticket holder in Toronto. You see all the games. I'm sure you've been impressed with him. There are some other obviously good defenders. I'm always amazed by Sandy Chapman at his size, how effective he is, but I would have to say Harris is the guy from there that really stands out.
Yeah, I've certainly watched him, and I always think of him as a transition guy, and he's certainly great in that role. But if you watch him just as a pure defender, he's certainly one of the best in that role as well. So he can do either one. He can be your shutdown defender and never run up the floor at all. But if he gets the opportunity to run up the floor, he can match with the best of them doing that as well. I thought, Sandy Chapman is always fun to watch as well. And it's been there forever. Like, I think he's the only remaining Rock player who played with Jim Beltman. And that's been a while.
Interesting. I hadn't even thought of that. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Carrying on the line of succession.
So friends of mine and I started talking about this last year, and we were trying to think who's left from the Jim Beltman days. And it was basically Chapman and Patrick Merrill at the time. And I think there may have been one more, but I can't remember who. Oh, it would have been Casey Behrens.
Okay, right.
I think Behrens and Beltman played one season together before Beltman retired.
Wow.
So I think Chapman's all that's left.
I'll just point out, we're going to take a quick break and come back with lots more, but I just want to point out, you can follow Pat Gregoire at pgreggy on Twitter. Is that right?
Yes, you got it.
Okay,
nailed
yes.
It. You nailed it.
And Graham Perro, you can follow on Twitter, but I would recommend following NLL Fact of the Day, because you'll get more nuggets like the connection, the Veltman, Behrens, Chapman legacy, and they're fascinating. I love going and checking it out. Sometimes I won't check for a few days, and then I just go and read them all to catch up. So follow both of them. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Box Labeat on NLL Radio. Welcome back to Box Labeat on NLL Radio. I am once again your host, Stephen Stamp, joined by Pat Gregoire and Graham Perro, two of my colleagues from IL Indoor. We have talked about the midseason MVP. We have talked about the midseason Defender of the Year. We're going to go for the Rookie of the Year now. And you guys both went way out on a limb in the preseason and went with the first overall draft pick, Josh Byrne. And you're both with him again now. I have joined the Byrne Club, but very, very tight. Graham, you mentioned how close it was between him and Zach Currier. I talked about it. And I literally wrote, as I was writing the musings and thinking about it and listing what Currier's done, I was like, oh, should I go back to Currier? But I stayed with Burks. He has been sensational. But I really think this one's a coin toss.
Agreed, yeah. I've been going back and forth, and I watch a Calgary game and go, there you go, it's Currier. And then I watch a Bandit game and go, oh, there you go, it's Josh Byrne. And, it changes with the wind for me, I think, at this point. Right now it's Byrne, just because he seems to be a left-handed, I think Teddy Jenner said this on his show, he's like a left-handed Callum Crawford. And obviously he's got the numbers, especially in the last couple of weeks, but he just looks really comfortable on the floor. He doesn't look like a rookie. He looks like he's been there for 5 years and has the system down pat, and everybody knows what everybody's doing, and looks like he's having a lot of fun out there. And And yeah, it just the fact that he doesn't look like a rookie might give him the edge in the Rookie of the Year award, sort of ironically.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, and I saw that when you said that he's got the Callum Crawford crease jump shot. That he does almost as well as Callum Crawford. And I thought, you know, Callum's really good at that, but I think if you ask Callum, he would tell you he doesn't do anything quite like what Josh Byrne does when he gets up in the air over the crease. It's a thing of beauty, and maybe what swayed me is just the spectacularness of a series of those goals. Now, Courier had, I still think, one of the best goals of the season early on when he picked up a loose ball off a faceoff, went running towards the end, towards the net, not right at it. And then when he saw he had an angle, he took off, jumped from the near side, reached far side across, and dunked it across behind the goal. It was spectacular. And he has been playing great, I think, every game. And the reason I had Courier early was because I thought Josh Byrne was very good. But Courier, maybe Graham, like you were saying, Courier didn't look like a rookie at any point this season. I thought from his first game on, he played like a veteran. And frankly, if we were talking Transition Player of the Year award, I think he'd be one of the three or four top guys.
Absolutely. I agree. This one's tough for me. I think it's, you know, with the last couple of weeks with the Buffalo offense, the resurgence that they're having, how well they're playing, and how big of a role he has played. You talk about, I mean, the beautiful goals that he has, that Byrne has scored. Just, if you get a chance, go to Moneyball Lacrosse and see some of his numbers in isolation play.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. You know, 7 goals on 19 shots in ISO. So, something that I'm going to be looking for, you know, down the road is teams are going to start, you know, having an eye on the backside, getting ready for that slide when he is, you know, trying for that isolation play, because he has so much speed and athleticism. He's just torching defenders, and good defenders at that too. And it looks like he's running out of space, so the D's doing a good job, but then he just, you know, jumps in the air and somehow has body control and scores at ridiculous angles. And but then you look at the other side, Courier. You want to talk about a guy that's not playing like a rookie. Well, that's him. Courier, you know, leading the league in loose balls is a huge thing for me, especially when he's beating two guys that take faceoffs.
Yeah.
And he's right there and cause turnovers as well. I honestly, I think if we had a vote for Transition Player of the Year, He's probably 1A, 1B, something like that. He's right there. I've been very impressed with his play this year. It's a tough call, but I think Byrne gets the edge. But like Graham said, there's a good chance next week I'll watch, you know, Calgary play and just be like, nope, no, I'm going with Courier now.
I actually thought for a moment, I was wondering when the votes were going to start rolling in, if Byrne being on the bye week this week might tilt it over towards Courier because people got to see him that week. And like you said, every time you watch one of these guys, you're like, oh yeah, it's him.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. The other thing, Pat, I like what you mentioned, that, you know, teams might have to start sending a second guy down low to keep Byrne from being able to torch around one player and have that line to the net and do things. And can you imagine if they have to start doing that, what that could lead to in terms of having Dane Smith and Callum Crawford and Craig England and Jordan Durston all and Mitch Jones open? My goodness.
I think Buffalo wants that to happen because now all of a sudden, Byrne's not going to get those goals, but his assist numbers are going to go through the roof. He's a nightmare to game plan for.
Yeah. And you know, just watching him play, I mean, Graham, early in the season, when you saw how hard he was working off ball, coming back and back checking, you just know he's not going to have a problem passing the ball when that's the better option.
Absolutely. And like you said, if defenses are starting to adjust, not just to your team's offense, but to you personally, that's a mark of a really good player. I mean, they're changing rules to handle the fact that Jeff Snyder was so good at it, so they changed rules around. So if other teams' defenses are adjusting just to Byrne, and let's make sure that he doesn't do what he can do, then you know that's a mark of an outstanding player.
Yeah. All right, those are the only awards we voted on. If anybody wants to, we didn't have it scheduled, but we've been talking about transition players. Let's just throw a few guys out because obviously Courier is one of them that we've talked about. I mentioned Tyson Bell earlier. He's been just electric. I'm going to throw a couple more names out quickly. One is Adrian Sorachetti, who for me, I wouldn't have voted for him before because to me, you have to first be a good defensive player to be a great transition player. But he has become a terrific defensive player just through hard work and focus on improving. And he's dynamic up the floor. And Scott Campbell, the 120-year-old Rochester Jayhawk, who's playing like he's 25. He's actually only 36. But what a year he is having as well.
Yeah, all those names, that's who would probably be in my conversation as well. With Sorachetti, yeah, that's the thing with me is, you know, he's worked on his game trying to get better as a five-on-five defender. And I wonder if it's not just to, you know, better his team right now and better himself as a defender, but maybe he recognizes that, you know, you look at that defense, there's a good chance he's probably going to, you know, be unprotected in the upcoming expansion draft. So that's a guy that I think those two teams are going to look at absolutely foam at the mouth if they could get a guy like him. And then he can, you know, become more of a dynamic player for a new team. He's a guy that I think, you know, if you're trying to grow a fan base down in San Diego, that's a guy that you wouldn't mind having on posters and being a poster boy for the game of lacrosse. As you mentioned, Tyson Bell, he's having an unbelievable season. He's an electric player. That's exactly what he is. You know, every single shift, he's doing something.
Yeah.
You know, he runs the floor well. Five on five, he's outstanding. When he does get his chances in transition, he knows when to take chances to score or set up a play. And he also knows when to slow things down and get off. He's a smart defender. And then, yeah, like you said, Campbell, like, he's having statistically, he's already surpassed his best season. I don't know if it's because Rochester has that young core, you know, playing right now, but he's playing like he's a kid again. It's awesome to see. I know he's in great shape, but a little bit of a shock to see how well he's playing this season.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about Adrian Sorachetti as a potential poster boy for San Diego. He looks like a surfer dude. He's got the blonde hair and the square jaw. Like he would be perfect for that, I think. Graham, do you want to throw anybody else in?
Another couple of names that come to mind, being a Toronto Rock fan, would be Sheldon Byrne and Jalen Rogers, both of whom are having excellent seasons. Sheldon Burns, I didn't know much about until he was traded for Steph LeBlanc, but he's all over the floor, and every time you look up, he's there, and he's got a scoring touch. He's good defensively. He's, like I said, he's everywhere. Jalen Rogers looks like the same Jalen Rogers we had last year with about 5 years experience, which obviously can't happen. But he had some injury issues last year, and I think he had reconstructive surgery on either his elbow or his shoulder. I don't remember which. But he's come back at least as strong as last year, and it looks like he just looks so much stronger and strong defensively, and obviously can run up the floor as well. So those are a couple other names. Craig Young in England comes to mind as well in Buffalo.
Yeah, I think Rogers, you really nailed the strength and the physicality he's brought. He's hugely improved. That makes me think, reminds me actually of another guy who, Nick Weiss in Buffalo, who had some trouble with injuries, some shoulder issues, and just wasn't himself for about a year and a half, either in the summer or the winter. And he has been dynamite for the Bandits this year. He is a nasty guy to play against.
Oh, yeah.
And he is scoring sensational goals. So, we've dealt with the rookies. We've thrown in a bonus transition player. Just want to ask about maybe some surprises, if there's something that you just didn't think you're going to see this year that has come to fruition. We'll start with Graham this time. Anything that stands out for you?
I guess the the biggest surprise for me, and like we've already talked about it a little bit, was the defense in Colorado. The fact that they lost guys like Dan Coates, Cam Holding. Losing either one of those is, you know, a tough break, but a team can pull together, and you know each player plays a little bit harder, and they can get through it. But to lose both at the same time, I think it was consecutive days that their injuries were announced. That's obviously tougher to withstand, but they've managed to do it. And they added a veteran like Scott Carnegie, which certainly helped, but he's missed time as well due to injuries. But every member of that defense has stepped up their game, and so now their defense is one of the best in the league, and I certainly wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, credit to, Greg Downing and Jordan Gillis and Taylor Stewart, all those guys, Brad Self, they've all really stepped up their game. To Bryce Sweeting, another great example, guys who weren't necessarily thought of as high-end players, certainly by their draft positions, but they've really, really put that together. Oh, Joey Capito. Almost forgot Joey Capito. And Graham, you didn't mention Joey Capito for I thought you might be on the Capito train for transition player, because he is another guy who does a lot.
He's certainly one of the better transition players around. Just watching his speed brings back memories of a guy like Steve Stoll.
Yeah. Patty.
Big surprises for me. I mean, there's been a ton, but maybe one that kind of sticks out is the lack of offense up until this week that we've seen out of Georgia.
Yeah.
This week, that could maybe be the turning point. Maybe now, inserting, a guy like Jordan Hall into the lineup. Maybe that's what they were missing. Because at the start of the year, maybe you don't have Hall, but you have Jesse King then coming into the lineup. And he's having a pretty good year, 32 points in 9 games. But we just haven't seen that head spinning ball movement that we've seen from the Swarm. Mind you, we saw it last week against the Rock. So maybe this is it. But it took a while for them to go. And I know there's the old, championship hangover.
Yeah.
But for the league, watching that offense last year, that's something that's good to grill the game, because they're entertaining to watch. But if they want to get back into that conversation, they have to continue to produce goals, because their defense isn't strong enough to hold down a game and win a game for you. So that's one thing for me. And I know you wanted to talk about it, but didn't expect to see Christian DelBianco take over for the starting goalie this year. Saw him in the Minto Cup last summer. Very impressed with him. Did I think he was going to be this good this quick? Probably not, but watching him over the last couple of weeks, it's been nothing short of magical.
Yeah, I want to touch on the Georgia thing. That was actually my surprise, I think, was the Georgia offense, that they haven't been more electric. But I think you can't underestimate, as good as Jesse King is, you can't underestimate how important Jordan Hall was for that offense last year. People don't get it, I don't think, just how good he is, what a glue guy he is on and off the floor. And I actually did a breakdown when Rochester traded him back to New England, and did before and after on Cody Jameson's points. Because Jordan Hall didn't score that much in his second stint in Rochester. But Cody Jameson's his scoring took a dip of about a point and a half per game, a point and a half to 2 points per game, when Hall was traded away for the rest of that season. And I don't think it's a coincidence that that happened, and I don't think it's a coincidence that Georgia got things rolling when Jordan Hall came back. He is actually that good, and probably not really noticed.
He's one of those unsung hero type players where you can just look at the number of points he gets and say, yeah, he's a pretty good player, I'd be happy to have him on the team. But he produces, or not so much produces, but he provides a lot more than just points and just assists. That as we've seen in Georgia, his returns sparked them to a victory in overtime over Toronto. And like you said, it's not that Jesse King isn't good enough to replace him, but he doesn't perform the same role.
Yeah. So Chris,
no doubt. Bianco.
Yeah, Christian Del Bianco. Patty, you brought him up, and definitely want to talk about him. I wasn't surprised that he took over the starting role. I like Frankie Chiliano, but there was a reason they took Del Bianco, and you knew it was going to happen at some point. It was just so sudden that all of a sudden he went in relief that one game about 3 games ago, and the whole team just kind of turned around. And I honestly thought the game in Toronto, obviously people were impressed with Del Bianco. Everyone was talking about their offense being so good. I actually thought it was just a lot of – I broke it down in my column. I thought it was a lot of individual efforts that you'll get sometimes, and sometimes you have to have those. And, I mean, they've got such great players in Dobie and Dixon and Berg and those guys. But I thought it was the following couple weeks – that the offense really took the momentum from that game and built back into what they can be. And I think they're much more dangerous playing the way they have the last couple weeks, where the whole team is involved. I think they've looked fantastic. And it's all been connected to Del Bianco going in. He gives them such a swagger. And to me, the big thing is he's all of a sudden he's become a strong angles goalie in the NLL. And it's another thing you can underestimate is how big a difference going from junior or senior lacrosse to the NLL with the nets being 3 inches wider. That's a full ball width. If you think you have the net covered, there's a ball width that can fit around you. And that's where a lot of goals go with these great shooters. So he's been spectacular. The passing, like how quickly he gets the ball from a rebound on the floor up into a stick and down into somebody's stick. And you can just see – you know, Zach Currier and Tyson Bell and Mitch Wild and Chad Cummings just salivating at the chances they're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you mentioned it, swagger and the confidence that this kid has. The net thing, definitely huge. I mean, he's not a big goalie by any stretch of the imagination. 5'10", he's under 200 pounds, but he's so athletic. He's so active in his net. But like you said, he's improved on his angles, and he has quieted down quite a bit in his crease. He doesn't move around nearly as much. But for me, yeah, absolutely. It's not just stopping balls, which obviously is the goalie's first job, but it's his ability to get around his crease, get out of the crease even sometimes, pick up that loose ball and fire it down the floor. His assist this week, or last week I should say, to Currier was unbelievable. Yes. He put it the only spot on the floor where Currier could get it, and it was a beautiful finish by Currier as well, but not many other goalies would maybe even have trust in their stick to make that pass and have trust in their player to know, you know what, I know he can go up and get that ball. The Roughnecks, their defense, I totally agree, their defense and Del Bianco in that game against the Rock, they were the difference makers. Yeah. Sure, there was a bunch of highlight reel goals from the Roughnecks, but the defense and Del Bianco really came together, and it started with Del Bianco, a couple of circus saves at the start of the game that I think the defense realized, all right, guys, we've got some help back here. Let's string together and let's turn this thing around, and boy, have they turned things around.
Yeah. Graham, you mentioned Jordan Hall as kind of an unsung hero, and I've been thinking about unsung heroes as well for this, and it's funny, one guy that I was thinking of just came up in this conversation, and I think he's going to have a tremendous career. I think he's going to get more attention now that he has his first National Lacrosse League goal, Chad Cummings, who is an absolute beast defensively for Calgary. Nobody knows him because he just goes back and plays defense, and he does run the floor, but he hasn't scored until this week, and the Roughnecks put out a tweet like, hey, it took him a year and a half, but he finally has his first goal. I thought that was a bit of a chirp to throw at your but I mean, Cummings has been just great. Pat, I know we've talked about this. We're both big fans, and I was just wondering if you want to say something about him, and if either of you have another unsung hero you'd like to toss in.
I haven't seen an awful lot of Chad Cummings, but I know he's massive. That's certainly one thing. Looking over his numbers, and there is an awful lot of zeros here. Obviously, he's not a goal scorer. He's got a handful of assists. Loose ball numbers are low. Penalty minute numbers are low. All the numbers are zero, but he's certainly one of those players where looking at the numbers doesn't tell you what he does and doesn't give you an idea of how good he is or how he plays. And he's 6'5". He's Brock Sorensen size. Yeah. And I actually kind of like the way Brock Sorensen played this year.
Yes.
Cummings is another one of those guys who's fun to watch on defense, just because he's another one of these guys whose name doesn't get mentioned all that often on the broadcast, which usually means he's doing what he needs to do.
Yeah.
I see a lot of him in the summer in Coburg, and he's really two completely different players, when he has to play with Coburg, a team that's, near the bottom of the standings in major series lacrosse, and then a team like Calgary where you have so many freak athletic players that, he can kind of just, sit back and relax, play 5-on-5D, but like you said, he can run the floor because he's so athletic. To the guy that, went away to play hockey at school and, then came back and, he was still playing junior ball, but realized that he was going to take this route. And I've always been a big, big fan of his game. But if you want to talk about some unsung heroes, a guy for me is Reid Reinhold in Toronto. He's a guy that, really, really creates some space for those big, big guys on offense, especially, Adam Jones. Jonesy's got great numbers this year, but a lot has to do with the fact that Reid Reinhold's a guy that's crashing and banging on the inside. He's got 10 pick assists this year, which is the most in the NLL. So he's a guy that I think doesn't really get enough credit, and he also, can put up some numbers as well. I've been really, really pleased with his game this year, and I think with LeBlanc going over to New England, it allowed him to play a bigger role as well.
I also think that the way Reinhold was playing and what they saw of him was a factor in them feeling they could trade LeBlanc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And Reinhold has been. I mean, just watch the assist he got on a Jones goal against Georgia, and he was tackled. A penalty was coming for holding because he was just wrapped up and taken to the floor, lands on his butt, and as he's falling, he's looking to see what's available and makes a pass from the floor to Adam Jones for a goal. And that epitomized to me what Reid Reinhold is all about.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. I think a lot of Jones' success this year can definitely be correlated to what Reid Reinhold does with the ball and sometimes crashing and banging without it.
We're getting near the end here. I just wanted to see if there's a moment or a couple of moments for each of you that just kind of stands out, a highlight, just something that you really are taking into the second half of the season with you.
Well, I think for me, and we've already touched upon it, for me, it's that game in Toronto, Del Bianco getting his first win, and that's when, because I was, on the call there and with Andy McNamara, and I said, I think this is the start of the Christian Del Bianco era. And with the last, three games, it has been the case. So I think we're seeing the emergence of an elite goaltender here, and it certainly has changed the dynamic of that team and kind of changed the confidence in that group. It was a team that was just about ready to hit that panic button, and good thing they didn't hit it quite then because Del Bianco came in. So I think that game as a moment is something that kind of stuck out for me. And then last week, you can even go to Saskatchewan losing their second game of the season, and Rochester, another team that was trending in the other way, and they completely, played a complete game. And Stephen, you were there on hand. You saw what a complete game they had. Now all of a sudden, they are right in the mix of things in the East, and they're a team that I know teams are not going to want them to just sneak into the playoffs because they're going to be a tough club to play against.
Especially with Matt Vince playing, almost as well as he ever has. And to me, Cody Jamison, and I talked to Cody after the game and said, it's been a while. Most of the season up to this last couple of weeks, you've been not really looking like yourself. You're getting back there, right? And he said, I think I've got a ways to go, but I'm feeling better every week. He definitely agreed the last couple of weeks he started to feel it. And that is scary for NLL defenses because, that's a guy who can change games all alone, all on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Graham.
One of the more memorable moments for me was actually not related to The Rock at all. well, I guess it was. The first game that I want to talk about was the Rock's demolishing of the Stealth early in the season. As a Rock fan, it was an entertaining game. As a lacrosse fan, maybe less so. And certainly as a Vancouver fan, I'm sure it was not much fun at all.
Right.
But just a few weeks later, they're still haven't won a game yet, and they're playing in Buffalo, and they go down 3-0. They don't score at all in the first quarter, and you could certainly see as a Vancouver fan or as anybody watching, just say, okay, well, here it comes again. The Stealth going to get blown out again. And suddenly they turn it on, and they score 5 straight to take a lead. The lead goes back and forth throughout the game, and they end up winning it in overtime. And I remember thinking at the time, this might turn their season around. And it's kind of unfortunate that it hasn't.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it kind of did in that they've played a lot better since then. Now, whether you lose by one goal in a really close one or you get totally blown out, a loss is a loss. So in the standings, it makes no difference.
Yeah.
But I guess they can kind of look on it as a bit of a confidence builder in that in most of the games since then, they've at least been in the game. Not so much this past weekend, but in most of the other games, they've at least been in the game and played reasonably well. The fact that they've lost every game since then is not much of a confidence boost, though. So it almost looked like it was going to turn the season around, and then it didn't.
I'm going to add a memorable moment or series of moments that kind of connects to the ones that you guys brought up. One, the emergence of a goaltender, and the other, talking about the Buffalo Bandits there. Zach Higgins, I think, has been a great story. And, we haven't mentioned him, but what a job he is doing in relief. I would imagine he's got to be, at this point, the starter in Buffalo after he's done the last couple of games. But he has been sensational. And I've probably seen him play more than just about anybody because I've watched him in the Canadian Lacrosse League and the Arena Lacrosse League. I was calling the European Championships in Finland last summer when he led the Israeli team to the first ever European Box Championship. And he was spectacular. And I've seen him play for Brooklyn in the summers. I've just felt like he just needed a chance to play a few games and get past kind of the nerves that he tends to get. And I think he's done it, and I think we could see another goalie who's establishing himself as a legit long-term starter.
Yeah, I think last year – sorry, Pat, go ahead.
No, you go. You got it.
I was just going to say, last year, Higgins did the same thing. He started the season on nobody's roster at all.
Yep.
And then Calgary ran into some goalie issues. I don't remember if it was a suspension.
It was. Frank Siliano was suspended and had to miss the first game of the year for the preseason game.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they sort of signed Higgins as an emergency goalie. He ended up coming into the game and had an outstanding game. And then they basically said, thanks for that. And then they released him, and he never played the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And then Buffalo kind of did the same thing this year, except they realized maybe we should just hold on to this guy. And he's given them 2 or 3 really good games. So so that's certainly good to see.
I think Calgary released him partly as a favor so that he could sign with somebody else if somebody else was looking, because they had Siliano and Del Bianco they were planning to go with. And, you're not going to take Siliano out because he's suspended for one game. Zach Higgins led the NLL in save percentage last season. Obviously, he didn't qualify for the title because he didn't play enough, but he was spectacular in that game in Calgary. And the cool thing was he played that night in Calgary, had that game. The next day, I was in Oshawa calling some Arena Lacrosse League games. The Oshawa Outlaws, his team, were playing, and I just said, obviously he's not going to be here. He was playing last night. He flew to the airport, went to the arena, and played, and may have been even better for the Outlaws than he was for Calgary the night before. It was amazing.
Awesome. Yeah. That's awesome.
That's just the type of player and type of guy he is. He just loves the game of lacrosse, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you've seen him play plenty as well. Wow, that's a lot of fun. Really enjoyed having you guys on. Just going to throw it to you to see if there's anything you want to add, anything you feel like we've missed.
I think we've nailed it on the head. I think lacrosse fans have been treated to a pretty good first half. Mm-hmm. And I mean, looking at the standings, everything's pretty tight, yeah, with the exception of obviously, unfortunately for them, Vancouver. Yeah. But it's anyone's ball game to get into postseason, and it's one of those things where, you know, even if you do finish in last this year in your division, there's a good chance that you could still find your ways to a Champions Cup final. So I'm excited for the second half. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this thing shakes down.
Graham?
Yeah, absolutely. The games so far have been very entertaining for the most part. The fact that we have a champion team that isn't looking like a championship team until very recently, and if they pull it together in the second half, that could make the East even more interesting than it already is. It does seem odd that the East is so close between first and fifth, and the West is so not close between first and fourth.
Yeah.
So if the East gets even closer because of the trade to New England or Jordan Hall returning for the Storm, the East is going to be a lot of fun to watch this year.
Yeah, I honestly think any three teams in the East could make the playoffs right now, and any two could miss.
Yeah, no doubt. It's kind of hard to look at a team like Buffalo and how they're playing and think, well, how could they miss the playoffs? But then you can look at any other team in the East and say, well, how could they miss the playoffs? But two of them are going to.
Yeah, it's going to be really something. Pat Gregoire, Graham Perro, thanks so much for being on and really bringing a lot of insight and fun to this episode of Boxle Beat.
Thanks a lot, Steve.